Hi there, I'm James Dapachir, and this is Coffee and a Case Note. Team, today we're going to talk about an intriguing set of facts relating to a plaintiff and some defendants. Our plaintiff today is the sole beneficiary and the administrator of the deceased's estate. This is a person who has passed away. We'll refer to them as the deceased today. Now, the deceased led an interesting life. The deceased, along with their sibling, was a member of a motorcycle gang, a motorcycle club, and was involved in some drug offences and interacted with the Crimes Commission and various things over their lives. And what happened was that during their lives, the deceased and their sibling entered into a number of business projects together. And what they did was apply some funds they had, and you know the source of those funds is not subject to the judgment, but you might like to speculate as to why they entered into some of the transactions we're going to talk about in a second. But what they and their sibling did was they entered into a number of business projects together, including property development projects and that sort of thing. And in about 2002, when they reflected on a piece of legislation called the Proceeds of Crimes Act, they resolved that they were going to undergo essentially an asset protection sort of strategy. And the nature of that strategy was that they, the deceased, and their sibling were going to transfer ownership of all the various business entities and property entities into the corpus of a trust that their parent was going to become the shareholder and director of the trustee company, and their parent on paper was going to become controller of all this stuff. And so essentially, we are trying to get the assets out of our names, out of the deceased's and their siblings' names, and into this entity controlled by the parent. Now, that is what the plaintiff says occurred, right? So the plaintiff is bringing this application today to say, I am the administrator of the deceased's estate, and what I would like made is a declaration that all of these assets held in this structure are held pursuant to an express trust, or pursuant to contract, or pursuant to a number of different kinds of estoppel. They are essentially held for the benefit of the deceased's estate. This is the argument made by the plaintiff. The argument made by the defendants, and the defendants include the parent who is resisting the application, as well as the sibling who is resisting the application. What the parent and the sibling do is they put forward evidence that the court finds to be thoroughly unconvincing, sadly, and low on detail. And essentially what they say in relation to the application is, nah, that's not right. They say, look, the way this money got in there is that the parent made some loans and that there was some obligation that is not made quite clear to pay them back. And also that this suggestion that there was some asset protection scheme as a result of the Proceeds of Crimes Act or the movements of the Crime Commission in the 1990s, all of that's misconceived. And so this is a Kafkaesque, a sort of overly complex and bureaucratic suggestion that the plaintiff's making. And we, as the defendants, defendant parent, defendant sibling, and these various defendant companies, we reject that there was any asset protection scheme entered into. What the court finds is that that is wrong. The evidence, there's some documentary evidence relating to exchanges made with accountants and the various setting up, the incorporating of the trust company, the setting up of the trust, the transferring of the assets out of the deceased's and the siblings' hands into the hands of these newly created entities. All of this is consistent and happens at around the time when this asset protection scheme would become relevant for the Proceeds of Crimes Act. And so the court has some comfort, firstly, in the lack of evidence from the defendants, secondly, in the reasonably compelling evidence put forward, with great respect, by the plaintiffs in relation to that scheme. And so the court says, yes, these assets are held by this trustee company by way of express trust for the benefit of the plaintiff in their capacity as administrator of the deceased's estate, right? So the plaintiff, that far, gets what they are after. Now, complexities arise in relation to what sort of relief the court might be able to order in respect of that finding, right? So the declaration's made of like, yeah, that's fine. The trustee company, it's 50-50. And as the deceased put it during their lives, Something like, Mum will hold all our shit, but our shit will still be ours. I'm paraphrasing a bit, but it's fun to use a swear word. I don't often get to use them, but there we go. In essence, what we have the court finding is, yes, indeed, the trustee company holds 50% of this stuff on trust for the deceased estate. There's this issue that arises of, well, that's all well and good in relation to an order to be made attaching to Mum, but how can the court make orders attaching to the trustee company that might fetter the trustee company's discretion in relation to how it deals with trust assets? As you know, and as I know, one of the important things about the administration of a trust is that a trustee's discretion remains unfettered in as far as possible. As far as possible, we want a trustee's discretion to remain unfettered. And so what was suggested was, oh, hang on, if we're forcing this trustee company to do certain things with 50% of the corpus of the trust, then aren't we fettering the discretion of the trustee? Well, the court grapples with respect quite usefully with this suggestion and forms the view that no, the discretion is not fettered at all. It is simply that that discretion can only be used in relation to 50% of the corpus of the trust and not the 50% that is held on trust for the estate of the deceased. And so the plaintiff gets what they came for. They succeed in arguing that the asset protection scheme was set up on the basis they suggest, and the assets are indeed held on trust for the estate. What happens after that is that costs follow the event, which means that the plaintiff, having successfully applied for the relief from the court that they came for, also obtained an order that the defendants pay the plaintiff's legal costs of that litigation. Hope that discussion assisted you, and I look forward to speaking again soon over another coffee and in respect of another case note. Cheers.